Hello, and welcome back to No Man's Land. We're beginning again after a period of a bit of inactivity where we felt that it was taking a little bit too much of our lives. So we're taking a new approach. We're going to start mainly with me and Steve talking. We might have guests down the line, but we hope that you enjoy our new format and some of our own analysis as we look forward to the next election. So, hello, Steve, and welcome.
Hi, Martin. Good to be back. How are you?
I'm all right, thanks. Yourself?
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good. Trying to keep warm.
Absolutely. All right, so let's start. When Sunak said that he was looking to hold the election, had the working assumption the election would be in the second half of the year, what was he trying to achieve by that?
That's the big moment we've had in January so far, haven't we? 2 weeks in, and the start of the year was very much. Oh, it's election year, almost certainly. Legally, it can be beginning of next year, but that's by the by. And everyone's talking about being election year. And the thing was, will Sunak call an early election? Will he bottle it? And he was getting slightly pushed into a corner as he's got to kind of either say there's going to be a May election. It would be probably when the mayorals are on May the 2nd, if they were going to do a spring one, or rule it out. And this build-up had started, and what he's done, I think, is find a kind of clever form of words to say, "I'm almost certainly doing it in what we all think is going to be November, but I'll leave a little bit of wiggle room open." But he shut down that kind of line of attack that Starmer and Co. could have used. It would have painted him as weak and bottling the election. So he's come up with a sleight of hand to get out of that, and I think it was a very deliberate play along those lines.
So my interpretation of the things about the timing of the election is that they genuinely believed that the polls were turned in their favour and that they'd have a spring one. You know, they've timed the tax changes for this month. They think there's going to be a budget in March, and they think, you know, these things are going to be really, really popular. We're going to introduce these things. We're going to ride this sort of wave. The polls are suddenly going to turn, and we're going to have is it May election? And I think they're still kind of thinking like that. I think that they'll get to March when they have to call it for a May election. The polls won't have moved, and so they'll go, well, we were never going to call it anyway. However, I'm still expecting, I'm a bit of an outlier here. I'm expecting that it will get to the autumn and they'll look at the polls and they'll go, essentially, Sunak will go, do I fancy stopping being Prime Minister by my own hand? Do I fancy turfing out my own government? And I think they'll probably delay it because my reasoning being there's not many people who voluntarily stop being prime minister. You know, you work for your entire sort of political life to achieve office. Most sort of top ranked politicians, they want to achieve office. They finally got what they wanted. They can look at the polls and go, we're going to get routed here. And I think they'll hang on in that kind of, well, hopefully something will turn up. And I think so. I'm still working on the assumption, though I am an outlier, that it will be January 25 election. Purely because no one gives up being in government before they have to. But like I say, I am a bit of an outlier in that.
Yeah, the turkeys won't vote for Christmas argument, that one is, I think. The other side of the coin is that it all just falls apart because we'll get on to talk probably a little bit about what's happening in Parliament at the moment, but he's just about got the Rwanda bill through to its third reading. But all this about the five families and the Tory party, the different factions. There is a take that I've heard that he just can't keep it together till November, let alone January. And he's going to be forced at some point to say, this is all falling apart. I've just got to call it and almost, you know, say it will just go out that way. Because half the energy of the Tory party is going into positioning for what's next right now. All the psychodrama is about that. So there's one take that says he'd love to have it in November, maybe January, but he might just have to go in May just because of that.
I mean, the slightly ironic thing about going, we'll just hang on and hope something turns up, is that the feeling you see it in the polls that the people have pretty sort of decisively turned against the government. The opposition has had, you know, enormously, remarkably consistent, considering the kind of variability and volatility of polling over the last few years and sort of politics in general. But the longer they hang on, the worse it gets. And so they're kind of stuck in a bit of a bind. But, you know, I completely get, I mean, I still think, you know, you look at someone like Theresa May, what did she do in an impossible position? She just carried on. I wouldn't be surprised that they just carry on. It, I mean, are a Tory backbenchers going to vote down their own government, force a general election? It's possible. At the moment, I'm not sure I'd put anything past them, but to me, it does seem unlikely. But who knows? Maybe they really do have that much of a sort of almost a political death wish.
Yeah, I think it'd be more that he would just think it's all so chaotic, or he might get ousted. He'll just go to the public first. I mean, yeah, it's beggar's belief, isn't it? Can they, will they do it again? Will they, will you know, you the thought after Truss resigned, they, that they would just hold on for dear life until the election, whatever the internal politics, but we're still seeing psychodrama. So there you go.
No, absolutely. There's certainly no shortage of that with this government. So then in terms of this, what is one of the leaders trying to achieve? What about Starmer? How has he started the year, and what's he been trying to achieve with his sort of political positioning?
Well, that same day, actually slightly before the sort of Sunak intervention about the timing of the election, he did a speech with some very fetching sort of robotics behind him. It was at a Catapult Centre in Bristol. A Catapult Centre is kind of an academic and business engagement-y thing. And the theme of the speech, well, all these speeches have numerous themes, but what he's been going for is this theme around national renewal constantly. And there's a take, I think, that I've heard and some good polling to back it up, which is that whereas you go back to 2016 and then to 2019 when we started the podcast initially, it was all about division. Politics was all about division and culture wars, if you think Britain went that way, and all that kind of thing. Well, fast forward to now in 2023, and it's all about trust. Basically, everyone distrusts politics, distrusts Westminster. And Starmer said, most notably in this speech, I think people are right to be anti-Westminster. And he's trying to, I think, spotlight even more than it already is that kind of distrust, that apathy at the Tory party. And he's then trying to offer hope or respect to, and uses the phrase ordinary working people. He uses it again and again and again in the context of national renewal, hope and trust. So I think he's trying to paint himself as a new thing coming in to sort Westminster out and sort the country out, whereas the problem is on the Tories. And the risk for him that he's trying to head off is that people kind of see him as all the same and not exciting enough, and that possibly they stay home or vote for third parties, etc. I think that's what he's trying to do.
I think it's really interesting as well to consider that in the kind of the broader context of Labour's, I suppose, pitch to the country, that I look at it and go, they're really trying to go big on kind of low-hanging fruit, that they know they're going to get the, as bad as an inheritance as possibly any government ever. I mean, you can look at maybe sort of Thatcher in 79, but was debt as high? You know, did you have so long of stagnation? They know it's going to be terrible. And so they're kind of going for a lot of the easy wins. You know, we're going to try and get the COVID fraud money back. We're going to have sort of national renewal. You know, we're not going to have parties throughout lockdowns. You know, a lot of kind of stuff that, you know, well, we wouldn't be like that. We wouldn't have done that. But they're not necessarily communicating. And I say communicating sort of particularly the sense of kind of that much of what they're going to do different, which there's been a few pieces recently. There was definitely one in The Guardian. There was one in The Times saying something. The Times one was saying Starmer's caution masks sort of quite radical agenda, and one in The Guardian saying that it's not sort of caution or timidity or, you know, not having anything to say that is of the case with Starmer and Labour is actually trying to avoid Tory traps. And I get that. But given that, you know, you look at someone like Paul Johnson at the IFS says that the parties are not being honest about the sort of fiscal reality of things. I personally think that actually, you know, we look at people love to look at these kind of echoes of the past. And I wonder whether the Theresa May election against against the Labour Party led by Corbyn 2017 is actually more instructive than people are letting on. That May had, and the Tories had enormous leads on every possible sort of measure and metric. You know, it was going to be a destruction. You know, Labour was going to be annihilated. And then there was a dementia tax, and she didn't sell it very well. She's not a great sort of, you know, public speaker. And the majority evaporated. And I wonder whether that's what stalks the kind of the fears of Labour at the moment, that if you put out anything, you know, because if you look at what Labour's kind of doing, they're trying to be quite centre ground in that they're trying to kind of steal Tory clothes on immigration and defence, but they're not, you know, and they're saying fiscal responsibility, growth. You know, there were, I read a piece from sort of Rachel Reeves, which I won't sort of bore our listeners with reading word for word, but it was very kind of motherhood and apple pie, and, you know, we want growth and trust. And there's definitely sort of, I'm sure, some things that can be done on those. But in terms of what, to me, Labour is kind of projecting out to people, it's partly kind of security. You know, you can trust us. We're not like Corbyn anymore. We're not going to run up these huge bills and debts and all of this sort of thing, though the Tories did. But alongside that is going to be very much kind of try to go for, talk about easy, to me, is kind of easy stuff. But so it's interesting to see how those sort of different aspects of their positioning are playing. But it does seem to be working, don't you think, when you look at the polls and the by-elections?
So it's if you have a policy in the first place, you get eviscerated for it. And then if you have it, you then can't deliver it and you get eviscerated for not delivering it. So why would you ever have a policy, I think, is what you were saying.
Well, I mean, the flip side is obviously you get attacked. You know, if you have a policy, you get attacked for the policy. If you don't have a policy, you get attacked for being vague and not having a policy. So, like, that is the business of politics, really. Isn't it? But it's interesting that if you read some of the sort of the words of Starmer and Reeves, there is stuff there around kind of an enabling state, sort of industrial strategy, a far more intervention. You know, it's very clearly not a new Labour pitch. It's something sort of substantially different in terms of a much greater kind of role for the state in directing the economy and trying to stimulate growth and, you know, all of these sorts of things. And it might be that in the same way that I think the kind of the, to me, you look at Starmer and people say, you know, he's a flip-flop and the Tories try to attack him for sort of, you know, flip-flopping. He just doesn't look very flip-floppy. You know, he's not smooth. He's not fluent. He's, you know, Reeves is the same. And that can kind of, you know, you don't look at them and sit like someone like Blair, amazingly kind of fluent and charismatic and looked slippery. It sounded kind of slippery. And Cameron, that sort of, you know, heir to Blair type, very similar. With Starmer and Reeves, you know, there's substance there, though there's kind of priorities there. It's not necessarily kind of detail nailed down. But they just don't come across as very slippery. You know, they just come across as kind of very serious and technocratic and quite dull, which, I mean, they probably are. And there is a kind of, you know, sign me up for the dullness premium right now after the, especially since 2016, the kind of upheaval that the country and the politics has undergone. So they might be right. That stability might bring it its own sort of premium. But it's sort of how will they then manage that tension for the time up until the election, which, of course, the Tories know when they want to have, or Sunak at least, has an idea of when he wants to do it and has the final decision. Whereas, of course, Labour, the opposition, you know, it could be any time.
It's really strange that Starmer's done so well in terms of the Labour's leader of the Conservative in the polls. And clearly he's done that in the way you say, by not having policies that are going to allow them to paint him in one way or another as a risk or as too left wing. But at the same time, his personal ratings, and you know, in a context of people you'd think wanting stability, are quite low, which I find odd. I think perhaps you and I are both pretty sympathetic, should we say, to Starmer and his team. But it is strange. Every time I hear a focus group report, it's pretty negative. I do want to pick up one thing as well, though, which is that I think the press, because Starmer is such a favourite, maybe we'll get to the polls in a minute, they're really going to focus in on this "you've got no policies" thing. And that happened after the speech. They were really digging into that. Whereas before, when he was just sort of the opposition, not the prime minister in waiting, I think they let him get away with it. And I think the press know, like you say, about the Theresa May election. They know about slip-ups. They know about how big a story it can be when someone says something substantive. So they're going to be gunning for more from Labour, possibly unfairly, really, because how much can you really be expected to work out in opposition? But I think the theme of this year is going to be the press wanting more policy from Labour well before, you know, particularly if it is a November, January election. They'll be asking for policy from now, I think, right until the day it happens.
And one thing I find sort of reflecting exactly on that, and whether this is a deliberate strategy by Labour or a deliberate plan by Labour or kind of by accident, is that if you are the kind of person, now I don't tend to read political speeches, but if you follow coverage of them, if you follow the sort of the immediate coverage, it's kind of different to the analysis that's like a step or two removed, because people say, you know, from a step or two removed, you know, Labour's actually got some, you know, it's talking about some quite radical things around changing the role of the state and far more sort of interventionist, trying to sort of direct the economy, this sort of thing. But they don't communicate it as though they have lots of things going on. And is that a failure of communication that they haven't put across a sort of a positive story for why you should vote Labour in a way that kind of resonates and stuff like that? Or is it done deliberately in a way that you can go, well, you can look back and go, well, look, you know, we said it was all there. It's all in our manifesto now. We've got a mandate for it. It's the way that different people sort of follow politics. And, you know, if you follow sort of press coverage of politics, it's very much on kind of, you know, fight personality clashes and kind of, you know, trivia and, you know, even the sort of the really sort of esteemed sort of broadsheets is very sort of very, very trivial and kind of silly and sort of quite childish. So it's possible that, you know, it's there and it's not just been not picked up, or it's possible that they're kind of deliberately presenting it in such a way that is really kind of, we want it all to be out there, or at least enough of it to be out there for our kind of purposes. We don't want anyone to pick up on it. I don't know. I'm no sort of political communications person, but the fact that it is there, but they don't seem to be communicating it effectively, I wonder, is that deliberate or that they're not very good at it?
I think it might well be deliberate. The problem you may run into is that if you win, do people feel you've got the mandate? Which brings us on to the polls, maybe.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, do you want to start with either the specific polls? So there was the recent YouGov MRP poll showing that, according to YouGov's own website, the headline is YouGov MRP shows Labour would win 1997-style landslide if election were held today. This is from the 15th of January, so 2 days before the date we're currently recording this. Keir Starmer will be sitting on 120-seat majority. Pretty conclusive, isn't it?
It's pretty conclusive. And just as a recap, without being at all, it's MRP, it's a model of what would happen in the different seats. So like you say, it gives a projection of what the actual result would be, where normally you just get a poll that says, oh, Labour, I think the average is still, and it's been for ages, about 15 points ahead. But now they're translating that into what would happen were election called in the current boundaries. Pretty stark. There's a lot of context around that poll, and it came the day, well, came yesterday, didn't it? Which was the day of the amendment votes on the Rwanda bill, which is no coincidence, but the poll was funded by conservative donors who were trying to push the debate a certain way. In terms of the state of the polls, it's been very stable. The lead, that sort of 15-point lead, has been basically the same since, I think, Sunak got a few points back when he sort of, well, just a little bit over a year ago, when he sort of steadied the ship after the complete mess of the trust debacle. And he got a few points back, and it's basically stayed the same. And every strategy refresh, every conference speech, mind you, his conference speech was dreadful, every single one hasn't moved anything, and nothing, he's not laid a glove on Starmer. So we're still there with that gap. Now, this kind of gets us onto what's going to happen at an election. And I sort of have a bit of a rough back of the envelope working. So I was looking at some interesting graphs the other day, and it shows you where the 2019 voters have gone. And basically the blue dots, the blue lines, lots going to Labour, really solid chunk. And that's a large part of Labour's lead. But lots and lots are going to Don't Know, and a good chunk is going to Reform. And quite a few to the big groups, just to say they won't vote. So you can kind of see that come election time, the Tories will squeeze those things back. And you can kind of see how they're going to eke out a few more votes and get a bit closer. Mind you, of course, you've also got the turnout thing where older voters vote Conservative. And so the younger voters tend to sadly stay at home. And so that often gets things closer. So you can see how they're going to close the gap. But what you can't see is how they're going to actually get anywhere near. So I think it might go to like a 10-point lead, a 9-point lead, but I still see Labour winning, and that would translate to a win. However, I do think that might mean, I don't know what assumption this MLP poll made exactly, but I do think that the any complacency about a huge majority probably is a bit complacent, because you can kind of see it tightening a bit just when the campaign really happens, whenever that is. So that's my running theory, is that I think I don't think Sunak can be the next prime minister or stay as prime minister. I do think there's a huge amount to play for in terms of the size of the majority, or whether even we get into minority government status. That is my sort of running take on the election when it comes.
I mean, my sort of approach is to take a slight step back from all of this, which is, how does the country kind of feel? You know, how does it feel in your bones? And cost of living crisis has been off the scale. People are, you know, the inflation is sort of, you know, is down to around about 4%. It ticked up, but it was so minimal that, you know, it would not surprise me at all if it's one of these things that gets revised in a few months' time, and actually they find out it went, you know, down or nowhere or something like that. But the cost of living crisis is still a thing. Very much. The people who are sort of better, you know, you're seeing wages beginning to increase faster than inflation, but how many people are sort of feeding that, and how does that compare to, what is it, 2+3 odd years of, you know, off the back of COVID, you've got a health service on its knees. You've got the cost of living crisis. You've got a housing crisis. You've got like huge numbers in terms of the immigration figures annually from a party who've made their whole thing about, you know, immigration. And there's some polling saying that actually, you know, it's the Tories have made a rod for their own back by constantly going on about immigration but not reducing it. You raise the issue as a salient. Issue of salience, but then don't do anything about it. So, which speaks very much to this kind of, certainly under Sunak, possibly under Truss, we didn't really get a chance to figure it out, and then Johnson, but it's kind of his thing, is that they, not only do they kind of seem like they don't know what they're doing, but they're constantly changing their minds. You know, Sunak, you mentioned the conference speech. So in conference speech, he's the changing man. You know, he's going to rip up the 30 odd years of consensus, whatever it was that he said. And within 6 months, less than 6 months, he's steady as she goes, no change, you know, don't change, we're on the right path. You know, it's clear they just, that's, you know, it blows your mind how big of a change that is, and the fact that it's clearly not underpinned by anything. So it's clearly a little bit of cluelessness kind of going on there. And then you raise a salience of an issue that you can't do anything, you know, you're not doing anything about. And so you sort of stir all of those sort of things in together. And I just kind of think, whatever the lack of enthusiasm for Starmer, that feeling of kind of don't know, won't vote, there's going to probably be a lot of that because, you know, you're going to, people are going to look at it and go, you know, sod the lot of them. I almost wonder whether you're going to get a few people. You know, it's not going to be maybe lots, but a few people who go, you know what, I'm usually a conservative voter, but it is actually time for a change. So I can't remember where I saw it to credit them, but saying that, you know, you've got a lot of people, at least, you know, significant enough number of people who are kind of feeling like that. It's just like, you know, it's the conservatives have not necessarily lost the people who agree with them ideologically. They've lost the people who are kind of, you know, not dyed in the wool dogmatic conservatives, but the ones who are kind of trusting to get the job done. They've lost them because, you know, what achievements have they had to point to from their time in government? So, you know, if you lose that, and for the Tories, you know, the nasty party that gets stuff done party, you know, they're in a lot of trouble. So I wonder whether, yes, a lot, you know, you'd expect that they'll get a lot of the sort of don't knows, won't votes, maybe the reform people back, but I actually wonder whether they could offset that by losing some people who are just like, yeah, it's just time for a change.
It could happen. And like, you're absolutely right how bad the, like, it's an incredible, it just, almost thinking back, it's just an incredible mess they've made of the last, well, few years, but the last year has been a bit of a joke. You know, my theory about the last few elections, which I'm going to repeat now, but we've done this in the pub a few times, is that the kind of norm is a hung parliament. So to go back through them, 2010, obviously hung parliament had the coalition. 2015, Cameron sneaks the tiniest little majority. 2017, May versus Corbyn, that was a hung parliament and minority Tory government. And then the, for me, the odd one out is the 2019 election, where obviously you have Brexit being a big issue and the Tories get a big majority. So I think the norm is a hung parliament. But like you say, with Labour being so solid, I think they are being solid, and with the Tories just a mess, I do think it'll be a Labour majority. I just wonder whether these huge numbers being thrown around are a little bit on the optimistic side.
And just to sort of finally to close, I think we really do have to remember how bad Labour did in 2019. You know, there's the worst in terms of, I think it was numbers of seats, not sure if it was vote share as well, but since, was it 1935? And of course, in 1935, Labour had never been a majority government, whereas, you know, in 2019, Labour had been the majority government 9 years before. So, you know, an enormous kind of crash, terrific sort of position, needs this like great big sort of swings, huge swing to get back to a majority of one. So I think it would be, it's not, I suppose, impossible that we do see this kind of volatility, you know, this kind of Tories are so tired, chuck them out, they haven't done anything, Brexit, Truss, Johnson, chaos everywhere. Whether, you know, it's possible that voters might see that and go, you know what, you need actual turfing out, you know, real kind of root and branch, get out of there, reform. But Labour's got so far to climb that, you know, they should be absolutely delighted with a majority in the double digits. Consider, you know, Labour would have snapped your hand off to have got close after 2019 and the next election. Never mind to, you know, talking about 97 style landslides. It's just, you know, it's a long, long way to go from where they were.
So if you go in the bookies, what are you betting? And I'll tell you, I reckon I would be like maybe 30, 40 seat majority. I'd be thinking that'd be where I'll be putting my £5. What about you?
Well, I will tell you. Well, maybe I should. Maybe I shouldn't reveal this to all of you and all of our listeners. But I had a moment of madness some months ago and put about £2 on James Cleverly to be the next leader of the Conservative Party, because I kind of felt that, you know, as Foreign Secretary, he seemed like it came across quite well. And since he got moved to the Home Office, he seems to have become a gaffe machine. So I wouldn't listen to any of my betting predictions after that, to be honest. So Yeah, I would say that seems like a similar sort of, I would have thought a similar ballpark, but who knows?
Who knows? Well, I think we've, I mean, there's loads more happening in 2024 across the world, particularly, but we're not going to try and put the world to rights today. There we go. We've made our predictions year ahead, and I guess we'll come back and do this again in a week or two.
Absolutely. Well, Steve, thank you very much. And I hope we've got still got some listeners out there, and I hope they enjoy our new style of podcasting on No Man's Land. So thank you very much, and goodbye.